And speaking of Richard Mueller, Mueller I think is how he pronounces it, thanks Brad and Desi, we're going to have Richard on in just a couple of minutes on the Green Front. He is the man of the moment talking about his conversion from being a climate change skeptic to being a believer, but he's not 100% in the same corner as some of us passionate advocates and activists. We're going to find out where that line, how far he has come to that line and where he's still not willing to cross over, but very interesting conversations. Richard Mueller has been in the news, being interviewed everywhere from Rachel Maddow's show and now on the Green Front since he wrote this column about his conversion. So that's coming up first on the Green Front, and my favorite climate convert, D.R. Tucker, will be joining me for that interview. And then in the second segment, we'll be speaking with the head of a group called the Blue Mass Group. That's masses in Massachusetts. Charlie Blandy is one of their principals, and he just wrote a great blog on climate change skepticism, and want to hear some of his comments. And last but not least, we'll be checking in with my new friend on Facebook, Lisa Bardak. She was one of hundreds, if not thousands, of people who marched on D.C. this past Saturday for the Stop the Frack attack, and she brought her Barbie doll to make her point, and we'll be chatting with her. She uses comedy, a little bit of humor and sarcasm, and her daughter's Barbie doll to make a point about fracking and climate change. So a great show coming up. Pleased to welcome you to the program. And DR, are you with me?
Yes, how are you doing?
Great. Really excited to have Richard Mueller on. You know, you'd never know until you ask. And I just was listening to him on NPR, and I said, well, you know, he's local. He's in our time zone, and he's in demand, and he seems to really enjoy this publicity he's getting. So let me try him. And sure enough, he's available. He'll be joining us in, well, any time, about another couple of minutes here. So looking forward to that, as well as your friend, Charlie Blandy. And we'll be focused, of course, on climate change and fracking. And by the way, Richard Mueller, I think, is a big proponent of natural gas, so should be an interesting hour ahead.
Yes, he has mentioned on Rachel Maddow's show the other night that that safe fracking might be the safest way to sort of reduce emissions and also satisfy the energy needs of emerging countries.
And hopefully that's more doable than clean coal, but we'll be all ears to hear about that, because it seems like there are so many safety and environmental and health concerns around fracking. And then, of course, we'll hear from Lisa Bardak, who this is her passion, stopping the rapid growth of fracking. At the very least, we need more studies. We need more information on, you know, the long-term impacts, let alone the short-term impacts, which are already being reported, by the way, in upstate New York and other areas where they're really going, you know, pretty aggressively.
Yes, it's leaving some places where the fracking takes place a little shaken up, if you will.
Yeah, even earthquakes are one of the side effects, and that's no small matter if you happen to be living, as I am, in the quake center of the world, or one of them anyway, and that's the San Francisco Bay Area. There's nothing fun about earthquakes, because you never know when it's going to be the big one. And while these are smaller quakes, they're reporting, you know, that they occur in large number when they do happen. And if they are, in fact, tied to fracking, clearly something is not so natural about that process, if it's causing everything from potential water contamination to some release of emissions, and last but not least, some earthquakes.
It's certainly on the fault line of debate, if you will.
Yes, and so while we're waiting for Richard to join us, DR, just a couple of highlights. Oh, wonderful. I'm sorry, I was talking to talking to the studio.
About this interesting subject.
Here we go. Well, thanks so much for joining us, especially on short notice. And we have seen you just about everywhere, and really a pleasure to have you on. And we are, you know, advocates here for believing that climate scientists know what they're talking about. So we've watched your story and your evolution, you know, very closely with great interest. And by the way, my co-host, I don't know if you heard this at the beginning, D.R. Tucker, I found him through the blogosphere when he wrote a column about his conversion from being a climate change skeptic to a believer, and he can tell the story better, and those regular listeners to the show know that it was actually reading the 2007 IPCC report that made him, you know, wake up and smell the carbon, so to speak, and call him my favorite Republican and climate number, because he is as obsessed with this subject matter as I am. So why don't you two say hello?
Yes, Richard, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Congratulations on your great piece in the New York Times earlier this week.
Well, thank you. Of course, I think the key work are the five papers we put online, our computer programs, and our analysis. And right away, I have to give credit to Robert Grody, who was a young scientist who was an absolute genius, and he was able to guide us to the best statistical methods and collect the data and put it online in a format that now other people can use it too. So in the end, we stand by, not my opinion, but by the science that we've done.
And by the way, I should mention the formal introduction. Richard, of course, founded the Berkeley Earth Surface Temperature Project, known as BEST, along with his daughter Elizabeth, who kindly got you lined up to be on our show. And you're also a professor of physics. So you certainly, you know, are an interesting figure to have had this evolution, for lack of a better
term. And also the author of a new book that just came out that I hope you'll mention.
Go ahead. Tell us the name.
It's Energy for Future Presidents. And it actually has a description of the Berkeley Earth Method and how we did it and what our results are for a lay audience. So I think people will find that a good introduction.
Okay. And before we do get into drill down a bit, pardon the expression, to what led you to have this conversion, you know, you're getting kind of a mixed response, I would say. First, climate activists applauded you because and noticed the irony that some of your research is funded by the Koch brothers, and would love to hear what you think about that irony, and also some criticism that you're just seeking publicity, you've got a new book out, and what took you so long?
Well, I'm not seeking publicity. Publicity is finding us. Everybody is calling us up and wants to talk to us. I think it's because for the last several years, we have actually developed a reputation of being objective and depending on the science. We're a group of 12 of us, including truly eminent people like Art Rosenfeld, who's won international awards for energy conservation. And then last December, one of our team members, Saul Perlmutter, won a Nobel Prize for the work he did in astrophysics. So I have a superb team. We are doing work that is objective, in which wherever the data leads, that's where we will be. I think we did establish that reputation. I think that's why we're getting the attention now.
It's Dr. Mueller, I wanted to bring up a specific point that you made in your op-ed where you note that you write at one point that Hurricane Katrina cannot be specifically linked to global warming. And when I read that, I actually raised my eyebrow because I remember a piece written by Ross Gilbspan in the Boston Globe in August 2005 where he noted that Hurricane Katrina's, quote, real name is global warming, unquote. And I thought he meant it in the sense that storms like Katrina are the inevitable consequence of what happens when we constantly pump without any sort of limitation, greenhouse gases and CO2 into the atmosphere. So even if your interpretation is correct that Katrina had nothing to do with global warming, is it fair to say that if we don't take any steps to reduce emissions, we are going to have more superstorms like Katrina?
Oh, no. First, you have to recognize that according to the National Hurricane Center in Miami, the number of hurricanes has been going down. The next thing you need to know is that Katrina was not a superstorm. It was only Category 3 when it hit New Orleans. It just happened to be the first Category 3 that hit New Orleans in decades. Mm-hmm. And they were unprepared for it. It was Category 5 when it was out to sea. And now we call it Category 5 because we have satellites and we can detect things out at sea. But the number of hurricanes has been constant. In fact, it's been going down slightly. The theory doesn't predict more intense storms. The theory says that's a possibility. But intense storms come about when there are big temperature differences between the equator and the poles. That's what drives the energy up that makes the hurricanes. And in the global warming theory, you expect that temperature difference to decrease because the poles warm more than the equator. So it's plausible that the storms will go up, plausible that they will go down, but Hurricane Katrina was just a hurricane that hit a city that was unprepared. It was not an extremely intense storm.
Okay, so from that perspective, I want to bring up a piece that Bill McKibben wrote last fall where he noted that Hurricane Irene's middle name was global warming. Was that an accurate statement or an inaccurate one?
Oh, you know, this is really unfortunate because right after Katrina 2005, people said, so now expect a whole bunch of more storms, and the next year not a single hurricane hit the U.S. When people exaggerate and they try to come up with dramatic examples to convince the public, that's the wrong way to go. You have to respect the public. You have to give them the honest truth and not the exaggerated truth. People now feel as if they've been misled. They say to me, what do you mean the polar bears aren't dying because of global warming? What do you mean the Himalayas aren't melting because of global warming? You get this stuff, and I think the public is smarter than most people think. Vice President Al Gore had so many exaggerations in his movie that I think there's a backlash now. And I think part of the reason why the polls show less interest in the United States is because so many of the proponents exaggerated. And they can get away with that for a few years, but eventually the public learns that it wasn't true.
Okay, I got to challenge you on that. I was one of the thousands of people that were trained by Al Gore. And, okay, if you don't believe Al Gore, that's one thing. But he had sitting next to him the whole 3 days for the training a climate scientist named Michael McCracken. And I don't know if you have an opinion on him, but what he said, which gave me goosebumps, was that the movie was actually milder, that since the film had come out, that that turned out to be the film version, the slideshow at the time we saw it in Inconvenient Truth, was conservative, that things were actually getting worse.
Well, no. In my previous book, not the New Energy book, but in the Physics for Future Presidents, I go through that film in some detail, and I show all the exaggerations. You have to recognize, first of all, that Al Gore should be considered a skeptic or a denier, because what he is saying is so far exaggerated from what the IPCC consensus is, but it's on the other side. So why do they call skeptics who think it's less bad skeptics, but people who think it's more bad, Gore should be considered a skeptic too, because most of what's in that film, when he shows New York City being flooded and the IPCC is predicting that sea level will rise by maybe 1 foot or 2 foot, but he shows New York City being flooded, when he shows the polar bears being hurt by global warming, when the scientific studies show that there's no evidence for that whatsoever, no. It's unfortunately exaggerated, and that hurts people who, like me, believe that the evidence is now strong, that humans are to blame, and there's something we need to do, but so much of the public has been, feel that they've been fooled, and there's a backlash now, and I think that's unfortunate.
Well, we could argue that. It would take the whole hour to do that because I certainly would challenge some of that, and you're the physicist.
Well, I would be happy to come back an hour sometime. I enjoy this because
the
science is often missed in the kind of training that Al Gore gives, which is to send a message but not to look at it independently.
Well, do you think Al Gore did a service to the country in terms of beginning to wake Americans up to this problem that you're now acknowledging is real?
Well, when he did that, I was worried that eventually it would be shown to be an exaggeration and the public would have backlash. I think that's now being vindicated. I think that's exactly what's happening.
It's an interesting point. Dr. Mueller, I wanted to sort of bring up the issue or the incident that first brought me to your attention, which was the so-called climate gate matter, where you noted at the time in some of your media appearances that it appeared at that point that there was some sort of a chicanery going on, and that's why you wanted to sort of check the data and check the figures. Now that you have validated, now that you have validated the information that was in dispute supposedly in the climate gate matter, is it fair to say once and for all that is a settled matter
should be
set aside?
That's not really accurate at all. The data they used in climate gate was proxy data. I wrote a book on the using of that. What they did was, I think, shameful, and it was scientific malpractice. If they were licensed scientists, they should have to lose their license. What they did is they held back the discordant data. Now, their data had to do with the temperature older than 400,000 years. Older than 400 years. That's what the main thing they were producing was. What they were saying was for the last 1,000 years, it has not been this warm. I think that conclusion is wrong. And global warming is right, but they were, again, exaggerating. They withheld the data, as they said in their emails. By the way, most people don't believe those emails were hacked. They were leaked by a member of the team. They held back
the
data.
Which member? Why would they do that?
I think some of the members of the team were pretty upset with the exaggerations that they were reporting.
And if that is indeed the case, then why? I believe there were 8 different investigations in the U.S. and U.K., all of which found the scientists innocent of data manipulation. So were all 8 fixes? That seems kind of odd.
It was not data manipulation. It was data hiding. Is that not a form of data manipulation? What's that? Hey, look, if they had done this at Berkeley or Stanford, I think they would have been shamed. The standards
really?
That they held over there at the University of East Anglia are just not up to what we consider standard scientific methods. When you withhold data that is discordant, and they refuse to release it until it came out in this leak, anyway, that's off the subject because I do believe in global warming. What's wrong is what they said, the conclusions that Michael Mann drew that it's the warmest it's been in 1,000 years. I was on the National Academy Review panel that looked at that. Our conclusion was he could not draw those conclusions.
Okay, if we have a show in the near future with Michael Manon, will you come on and you guys can debate? Because I think that would make for some interesting...
Well, I would like to have him. Michael Manon characterized me as a scientist who's never done anything in his life, and I thought that was highly misleading. He didn't mention the awards, the discoveries I've done, all the work I've done. He was basically an ad hominem attack when, in fact, the data shows that he is wrong. So, look, global warming is real and it's caused by humans.
Mm-hmm.
The
yep.
trouble is there's so much nonsense out there that this misleads people. The problem isn't what we have so far. The problem is what's coming up in the future. And
okay.
that's what we have to worry about.
Okay, would you call nonsense just what's happened in the past month alone, record drought, record heat, record fires, all kinds of intense weather?
Okay, let me give you a little background on that. The NOAA announced that this is the warmest year on record for the United States. That immediately surprised me because I had been looking at the world record, and I'd seen that the temperature had actually gone down compared to the last 5 years. So I looked it up, and sure enough, the 2% of the world that happens to be the United States is a record warm. The 98% of the world, the rest of it, was actually cool. Okay, we're having a heat spell. To call that global warming when the globe isn't warming is just an attempt to grab headlines to get the public interested in this important issue. But I don't think it should be done to such exaggeration.
I hope we're not losing anyone, but I do know that we've already broken, you know, tens of thousands of records. I mean, for like something like 40,000 heat records?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah,
well,
how can you ignore that?
My position is the world has warmed on average. And when the world is warmed, you expect records to be broken. That's true. The last decade is the warmest it's been in 250 years.
Okay, just a couple weeks ago.
Warming is taking place. What's not taking place are all these other things.
Well, what about more than half of the country is, you know, having extreme drought conditions and states of emergency? Would you attribute that to climate change? The droughts and the fires? Just those
well, it depends on what you mean by climate. There is microclimate that's due primarily to changes in ocean currents, such as El Nino and the Gulf Stream. We had this in the 1930s when we had terrible droughts. That wasn't due to climate change. But now when there's a terrible drought, people say climate change.
The fact is the variability
has not increased. It is warmer, but no, I don't think there is any good scientific evidence to attribute that to climate change.
Dr. Mueller, I think part of the frustration on my part, and I hope I can speak for Betsy here on her part, is that you note, okay, that it's getting warmer. The problem here is that when you have industries, including, you've been talking about this before, entities such as the Charles Koch Foundation that have been funding people who run around saying without any evidence whatsoever that it's getting cooler, it tends to make you a little, in my case anyway, irritated. I don't really want to speak to that. I happen to find that quite frankly perverse that people are asserting things without evidence within a certain political movement in this country, a movement that I used to be a part of. Do you have any thoughts on that? You mentioned that certain allegations claiming that certain things are global warming when they're not does a disservice to science. But when people are blatantly going on, shall we say, Fox Business Channel and saying it's getting cooler when it's not, does that also not do a disservice to science?
Oh, absolutely. I think both sides have been equally bad on this. Many of the people who are concerned about global warming have ignored the legitimate criticisms of many of the skeptics. I believe that's why the Koch Foundation funded us, because we showed them that we understood those criticisms and could look at them in an objective way, which we did. But that's important to do. There are people on both sides who have done this, and I don't particularly see that Fox News is any worse on one side than MSNBC is on the other.
We would argue that, but I we only have a couple minutes, and I have to ask you: do you know David and Charles Koch personally at all?
I have met them.
And how would you characterize their view of science and climate change? Truly, because
they have every reason to think
that they're actively denying it, and yet your daughter was quoted as saying they have a real interest in getting to the bottom of the science. Is that accurate?
No, that's a cartoon characterization that comes about from some articles that, the idea, for example, that all generals are in favor of nuclear war, and that everybody in industry is a denier is just a very naive viewpoint. They emphasized to me that what they wanted was to get the science right. If we could address these issues, which were valid issues, then, they wanted to know what the real answer was. I think they had legitimate concerns. I think 3 years ago, everybody should have had legitimate concerns because the issues being raised, like the quality of the temperature stations, like the adjustments to the data that had been made, like the issue, the fact that, that the UK group was only using 7% of the data. These were real issues that needed to be addressed, and we did. And we came to the conclusion that the global warming is real, and the evidence points very strongly to 100% of it being due to humans. But that evidence had to be examined before you could really reach this strong conclusion. We reached a stronger conclusion than the UN.
And since you came to your conclusions, which matches what 98% of the world's climate scientists, expert in their field, say, have you talked to the Koch brothers or been in touch with them? And might this change their views or where they put their money in light of your coming out, for lack of a better term?
You know, I can't tell where the foundation is going to put its money. That's beyond me. But I think when
I've now reached
an agreement with 98%, I actually disagree with most of that 98% on many of the things they say, if not most things. Global warming is real. The things that they attribute to climate change, I think, are mostly wrong and demonstrably wrong.
With all the buildup of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, why, and you're a physicist, why is that, it shouldn't be, I'm not a scientist, but it's not rocket science that we are tampering with the atmosphere, and that is changing our weather patterns.
Absolutely. But the change so far has been less than 1 degree Celsius, two-thirds of 1 degree Celsius. The problem is not that anything has happened so far. The problem is that we expect, with the continued emissions, particularly in the developing world, particularly based on coal, that this will go much higher. And based on what we have done in my group, I expect that to happen, and I expect it to get much, much warmer than it's ever been during the era of Homo sapiens. But that doesn't mean that we're seeing increased wildfires. It doesn't mean we're seeing increased tornadoes. We're not. Yes, the temperature's going up. Yes, it's greenhouse gases. But to exaggerate it by bringing in all these other things, I think, tends to mislead the public. And when they learn they're wrong, when 2006 there are no hurricanes hitting the U.S. despite predictions, they tend to become somewhat cynical about science. And I think that's really unfortunate.
And I don't think it was so much predicting increased quantity of hurricanes as intense storms. And
let's set hurricanes aside for a minute.
What about, do you think that all that, we just had an incredible wave of fires and the droughts are continuing and cattle are, you know, being slaughtered because they can't get enough corn.
The greatest drought since 1930,
because of corn crops,
right?
Is that all just something you'd expect to see, you know, in a normal fluctuation?
We saw it in 1930. It was called the Dust Bowl. So, yes, these things happen, and they are normal fluctuations. They're driven primarily by El Nino and the Gulf Stream. And these large changes are not due to two-thirds of 1 degree Celsius.
Dear?
Dr. Moore, you mentioned, we just made reference to on the Rachel Maddow show, your contention that a cleaner form of fracking is needed to sort of both supply the world's energy needs and also to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. What's your take on nuclear energy? Do you think that's something that also has to be ramped up, or do you think the risks?
I think nuclear energy can be made clean. I believe that the nuclear waste storage, is greatly exaggerated. On the other hand, I don't think that nuclear is going to be able to compete economically with natural gas. The same is true of wind and solar. I'm a real favor of wind and solar. My new book, Energy for Future Presidents, goes into detail on wind and solar and shows how they'll work. But the real problem is that the cost of natural gas has come down so low that nuclear, wind, the only thing that can compete with natural gas, with clean fracked natural gas, is energy conservation and energy efficiency. It's the only thing that can compete, and those are actually much, much better because you can make a huge profit by putting some insulation into your ceiling.
And if conservation is really key, Dr. Mueller, how are Americans going to learn how to conserve more? Certainly we need policies that, you know, incentivize energy efficiency. But, you know, this is our pet peeve here, with not one, you know, media show on mainstream platforms talking about these issues, energy and the need to create cleaner forms of it, and how Americans can take part in this crisis, how are they going to learn about this, what to do, especially if we have a pretty short time frame to turn things around, which perhaps you do agree with that.
Well, I'm hoping that my new book addresses those issues. I think people need to recognize that energy conservation doesn't mean making a sacrifice for the good of the world. It means making money. A little bit of insulation in your house pays for itself at an interest rate that's 20 to 40% per year. I mean, that's better than you could have gotten from Madoff's Ponzi scheme, if we're honest. This enormous return on investment in energy conservation. I think too much energy conservation has been sold as a make a sacrifice. Now, if you want to be cynical, you can say, of course, that's what the oil and gas companies do. They want you to think that energy conservation is making a sacrifice. In fact, it's highly profitable. And I talk a lot about that in my book. I give the numbers. I show how you can invest and get a great return on your income. So that is something that we need to stop saying sacrifice and do energy conservation. Let's use technical energy conservation. And in technical conservation, you buy a little more insulation for your house, and you're better off.
Okay, you have to go, and we have to go to a spot. But just one last quick question, and that's, do you support fracking, and do you really think there is something that is, you know, a safe way to extract natural gas?
Well, I certainly don't support the old kind of fracking, but I think clean fracking, in which you just fine the hell out of the companies if they spill anything or upset the water tables, they can fix it up. Compared to developing really cheap solar, developing really clean fracking, I think, is relatively straightforward. The earthquake danger is really quite small. I believe they can minimize that, too. So I think clean fracking is something we have to do technologically, but I think it can be done largely by fining the companies if they spill.
Good point.
Thank you for
good
your
point.
Thank you for your comments. And Dr. Richard Mueller, we can't really appreciate your being available on short notice. And we don't agree with everything you said, but that's okay. Appreciate you
being
willing
to call me back sometime. Thank you very much.
We'll get Dr. Michael Mann on the same time. And D.R. Tucker, you're going to stay with us. We'll have your friend Charles Blandy up in a few minutes. Maybe he heard some of that conversation and can comment. And then in our last segment, we'll be talking more about fracking, drilling down with Lisa Bardack. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Green Front. I am joined by my co-host, D.R. Tucker, and we're going to be speaking with one of his comrades out on the East Coast, the Boston area. There's a group called Blue Mass Group, which I love that name. Blue Man Group, I'm sure, is the inspiration there. But the conversation there is all about reality, scientific, political reality. And Charlie Blandy wrote a great post a few days ago. I saw it, and I said, let's get him on. I like his thinking, very direct. So thanks for joining us on The Green Front, Charlie.
Hey, no problem. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you heard any of the conversation with Dr. Richard Mueller a few minutes ago. We certainly had plenty of things we could have debated about for more than an hour, but, you know, got to show some respect for guests, and he did come over to believe that climate change is real. But, of course, being funded by the Koch brothers, that's especially interesting, creates some cognitive dissonance, I would think. But he was not going to go out on a limb and say that, you know, that's going to change the Koch's position on it, although he said they're open to scientific inquiry. That certainly is debatable.
Hope so. That would be news.
Yeah, if they changed, you know, what they're funding, we'd believe it. But he didn't go so far as to predict that would happen.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I certainly think that they probably feel that their money was wasted and probably could have gone towards something else that would have furthered their cause a bit more. But you know, we should be glad that he you know, was willing to burn that bridge finally. So you know, there's a silver lining for sure.
Speaking of burn, he of course cast doubt that these you know, record fires, some of which are probably still burning, and certainly the drought continues across much of the nation. More than half of, I believe, the states still have droughts going on. And then, of course, Greenland just melted, in case you missed that. He's not attributing that to climate change.
Yeah, well, I think that he's probably still a few years behind a lot of climate scientists these days, who are certainly a lot more willing to attribute a lot of these events to global warming. I mean, the analogy that I make is it's sort of like Barry Bonds with steroids, you know, or Mark McGuire. You know, any one particular event, any one drought, any one bad season can't be attributed to climate change. But, you know, you get to 65, 66, 67, 73 home runs in a season, you start to wonder if a baseball player is, you know, taking the juice. And, you know, that's what our climate is like these days. It's climate on steroids, and it's weather on steroids. So, you know, I understand that reticence, but I think he's a little bit far behind on his thinking.
Charlie, in your most recent post, you also mentioned that Senator Scott Brown is suddenly doing a double reverse or a triple reverse or a quadruple reverse or God knows what he's doing by once again saying that he believes man-made global warming is real after 2 years of both denying it the reality of the science and voting twice to strip the EPA of its Supreme Court-recognized authority to regulate greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. What do you think he's trying to pull here?
You know, I suspect that in his case, he's simply trying to cover a particular space on the political map. I think it's more of a covering his center flank as opposed to something that will actually lead to something, you know, very forward-looking and proactive in his case. You know, Scott Brown is a very savvy politician, and he lives in a state that is that really doesn't have much use for kind of hardcore Tea Party Republicanism. We haven't had that, and I don't
Thank
think
God.
We ever will. Yeah, well, exactly. And so, you know, he's in a sense, he knows what he's doing. And I think that he understands that because of the weather in the last 12 months, I mean, here in New England, we really didn't have winter. Winter didn't really happen. We didn't really have an enormous snowstorm the way that we usually do. We usually have one or two big storms over the course of the winter, and we didn't have that. And then, you know, everybody can see the droughts and the fires, everything that we would associate with climate change. We can all see that, and so it looks sillier and sillier for somebody in his position, where people actually are, to some extent, paying attention. It looks sillier and sillier to continue to deny climate change in the same way that he has. Now, you know, whether that changes his actions, I mean, I suspect that he still would have blocked the EPA from taking action on carbon dioxide. I don't think that would make any difference at all. But he likes to talk a bipartisan game while essentially being as right-wing and as conservative as he feels he can get away with. So let's just say he's got a lot further to go to convince us of his global warming bona fides. But at the same time, you have to look at it as mildly, slightly encouraging, because he did change his position. He did change his position. And if you change his position, well, you know, maybe we can get someplace on this.
Good point. In reviewing some of your recent posts on the issue of climate change, one of the posts that came up, and one of the issues that came up, is an issue involving somebody who I used to be a fan of, which is a Boston Globe columnist, Jeff Jacoby, whose articles on climate change seem to be very popular among what I now call the John Birch Society wing of the GOP, which is virtually all of it these days. Does it strike you as kind of strange that they put forward this viewpoint as conservative when, if you look at actual conservative philosophy, and if you look at what Russell Kirk said about the importance of environmental protection, and if you look at what Barry Goldwater, even in one of his books, The Conscience of the Majority, said about environmental protection, and what Margaret Thatcher, no lefty, said about the need to take action against climate change, does it strike you as bizarre that his viewpoint is put forward as conservative when it's really more of, as Betsy has put it, corporate libertarianism?
You know, I don't even understand what's in it for most corporations, frankly. It seems to me that continuing to dump carbon into the atmosphere and to endanger our living space, it only enriches a tiny, tiny proportion of the population. And then, even for them, only for a limited amount of time. What's going on here with Jacoby and with George Will and, you know, people who really ought to know better? They ought to know better. I mean, you know, Betsy mentioned cognitive dissonance before. I mean, I think that is what's going on here, is that there are two ideas which are utterly incompatible with each other, which is that, you know, if global warming is real, then that means the lefties and the liberals and the enviros and the greens and the dirty hippies, basically, in their view, have to be right. And the dirty hippies, the lefties and the enviros, can't possibly be right in their mind. Therefore, in their minds, the evidence and what is staring them right in the face and the science has to be wrong. And so that's what's going on mentally in their minds, is that, you know, they can't be wrong about this. It must be it must be that the evidence, it must be that reality is wrong. And the power of human rationalization is extremely strong. It is something that, you know, when it comes up in politics again and again, people will choose tribalism. They will choose our side is great and your side is wrong. They will choose that over actually living in harmony with reality as it actually is. And so, you know, what I often say is, you know, is it going to kill you to admit that you're wrong? Is it going to kill you? And the fact is, most of the time, yeah, it's going to kill them. It's going to absolutely kill them. So, you know, George Will and Jeff Jacoby and any number of these people know there is nothing inherently conservative about resisting climate change. There is everything conservative about resisting it. We want to conserve the climate. We want
exactly.
to keep things as they are and as they have been for many thousands of years, and which have engendered our civilization. This is how we've grown up. This is how humanity has flourished. We want to keep things the way they are. That's conservative.
And
what
and
we want to do is stop changing things. And so, you know, I think maybe that's the idea that we have to promulgate, that we have to take to the public, that we want climate stability. That's what makes sense to me.
The ultimate in climate cognitive dissonance is, you know, these people, most of them must have children, some may have grandchildren, and we're supposed to look, you know, seven generations down the line, and they're completely ignoring that for their ideology and their inability, as you say, to acknowledge that the tribe might be wrong on this one.
Yeah, it's deeply unfortunate, but we have to understand, I think, how powerful that instinct is to circle the wagons and to ignore what's in front of your face. We're dealing with something that is inherent in human nature. It's not just that there are good people versus bad people. I think that ability to rationalize is something that has shown up in history and shows up in psychology just again and again and again. And, you know, I don't have a silver bullet in knowing how to deal with it. You know, there are any number of studies that say again and again that if you confront somebody with logic and facts, a lot of times that forces them to harden their position. And certainly anybody who's dealt with denial, and that is truly what we're dealing with denial in terms of substance abuse, knows that to be the case. You can't simply expect somebody to change simply by bringing out facts and logic with them. I mean, we can have an intervention with these with the denialists, but you know, it's they have to want to change themselves, truly. Now, fortunately, I mean, I think that there's a different way. I think that dealing directly with the hardcore denialists might be counterproductive, but in any public conversation, we have to realize that there are, you know, there's a third party in the room. There are people who are looking on to the conversation. So you will not be able to directly baptize and conserve and convert a climate hardcore climate denialist. But there are a lot of people who either are on the fence, who are ill-informed by the professional media, and who don't know how grave the situation is, and they can be convinced. There are any number of people who can be convinced by sound logic and by facts, but they won't be the people who are in denial.
And Charlie,
you need to look for people who do not have that psychological armor put on already.
And Charlie, we just have one more minute left before we want to go to Lisa Bardak, who was at the Frack Attack rally, but wanted to just ask you one last question. You mentioned media. How big a problem do you think the preponderance of ultra-conservative shows on radio and television and lack of the equivalent, especially focused on environmental issues, is part of the problem?
Well, what I would like, first of all, Fox News and the entire corporate right-wing corporate infrastructure is a huge problem, only because you can wake up in the morning at 6 a.m. and go to bed at 11 at night inhaling and absorbing nothing but ultra-conservative ideas. You can wake up in the morning to talk radio and watch Fox all day and then go to bed, and that's all that you've ever learned. And so that sort of inoculates a lot of people to what's actually happening. You know, as far as left-wing and liberal and progressive speakers, yes, of course we need more of those. I think that, you know, these days with the blogosphere, people can get those ideas. They can get there. But I would love just simply for the regular mainstream media, the mainstream media outlets, to pay as much attention as this issue deserves. That's all.
Thank you. Charlie Blandy, really appreciate you joining us. And
Dr.
Tucker, thanks as well, dear.
Thanks
a lot, Betsy.
Thanks.
Lisa Bardak is standing by patiently. Lisa, last but not least, sorry to keep you till the end here, but we got Richard Mueller on at the last minute, so since he's the man of the moment in terms of the blogosphere and climate change skeptics starting to believe, well, had to get that on. But you are extremely concerned about fracking, the extraction of natural gas, and the impact on our environment and our health, so much so that you were part of the rally that you did not hear much about, most likely, in mainstream media on Saturday, even though you had about how many protesters there?
Well, there were thousands, some estimate 5,000. And while your last guest was just speaking, I was just sitting here nodding my head, you know, because of it was so little coverage on the rally. It's quite astonishing.
It is, and yet we saw the same thing with Keystone. Until there were massive number of people arrested, mainstream media pretty much ignored it, and only after, you know, one or two major protests did they start paying attention. And that means that, you know, that the mainstream public doesn't get to know that this is happening. That we could talk about a long time, but let's talk about what did happen there, since you were there with your Barbie doll.
Yes, I was there with Barbie shooting a bit, but also I really went this time with an intention of really wanting to get to know the people who had come to this rally. You had people that came from as far as Australia, people from Idaho, Wyoming, West Virginia, many, many states that were represented, people who are truly affected and being poisoned by this natural gas extraction process. And as someone who lives in Baltimore, I'm kind of a typical person who's not directly affected by fracking. And we don't have opportunities to speak directly to people who are being affected by fracking every day. And it was quite a moving experience to talk directly with these people, as well as to listen to the speakers who were there with full heart speaking to everyone to really rally people up. One of the real emphases that came out a lot of the speaking, a lot of the people who spoke, was the absurd infusion of cash into Congress that has basically outsized citizens within our own democracy. That fracking is literally taking away our democracy and our country. Josh Fox mentioned that the gas industry spent $750,000 just to defeat the FRAC Act, which would cause the gas industry to reveal what chemicals they are injecting into the ground that are ultimately getting into people and ecosystems and so on. And nobody has that kind of money that's against fracking. And so it's really about people versus money. But the rally, people there, they were inspired. It was extraordinary. There were people who were there from 8 years of age to well into their 70s in the hot, hot, blazing sun, listening to the speakers and then marching from the Capitol way down to the American Petroleum Institute. And it was extraordinary to see thousands. It looked to me like 5,000 people walking and chanting on their way to the American Petroleum to stop the madness of fracking.
any arrests, or was it peaceful? And
this was strictly a peaceful march and rally. I think the rally is a very important aspect of it, because I was trying to be somewhat journalistic. I was doing some videotaping and so on, and I felt torn because I wanted to woo a lot, and I had to shoot video instead. But it really is important for the people who are there to feel this community that is growing, because we are all we have as we continue to grow as a force against the gas industry.
And we had Richard Mueller on, and he talked about clean fracking, which, of course, sounds just like clean coal, which, of course, doesn't exist. Any comments
that's
on
right.
that?
That's right. I mean, right now, especially with this particular form of fracking, is, you know, hydraulic fracturing, and it's the horizontal fracturing, this particular, that came in about 2000 and then was, freed of all federal environmental law in 2004 by the Bush-Cheney administration. It's been going on since then at lightning speed, and it's frightening. And the people, and there are people, you know, often, of course, they're going into areas where people are in need of money, economically depressed areas, and sometimes it's hard to pass up what's being offered, especially if you haven't truly been exposed to what other people have experienced. And though at first inviting, in the end, when your house loses its water, when people in your family are suddenly coming up with illnesses that doctors cannot put a finger on, you realize what really matters most in life.
Lisa, you wrote a great blog about the calm after the storm, reflections on the gift of electricity after you lost power earlier this summer, and we're with your young daughter. We just have a couple minutes, and I want to make sure that we give out your website and where people can see you doing your Barbie spiel as well. But that was very moving. That's when I decided I wanted to have you on the show.
Thanks. Yeah, and you know, and the Barbie, I've been using my Barbie doll from the 60s to do some anti-frack rapping, to try to get outside the box a little bit, to reach new audiences in different ways, and to not have the message be so bludgeoning that they can't take it in. And yet, it's a very grave issue. And I'm going to be posting videos on my blog in the next couple of weeks, from videos I've taken of children who I spoke to at the rally, and other people that had extraordinary messages that people need to hear beyond the anti-fracking choir.
Lisa Bardak, I'm just going to give out your website so people can read about what happened when you had that blackout, and also other great posts that you are just eloquent at expressing yourself. WordsForABetterWorld.com is the website, and you've got to check out her Barbie routine. It's on video there, and it'll make you laugh.
It's a road
track. But it's really clever. So thanks so much for joining us and for all the great work you're doing out there, and we'll have
you
on again
next
time we have a little bit more time. That does
it
for this edition of The Green Front. If you missed part of the show, you can find it archived at prn.fm or my website, which is thegreenfront.com. Have a great green week, and tell your friends about this program, Best Kept Secret on the Internet.